Good morning. I now call to order the meeting of the Joint Development and Real Estate Committee. The time is 10:20 on October the 28th, 2010. Is there a motion to approve the minutes as if read for our meeting on September 30th?
So moved.
It's been moved by Mr. Zimmerman, seconded by Mr. Downey. Discussion, discussion, discussion. Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed, no. The ayes have it. Without objection, the agenda is approved. It's one action item, and it is an action. Let me introduce the item by saying this is one of those issues which has both local concern, but is also something of broader concern because it deals with the issue of to what extent do we engage with our impacted communities on projects that involve the development of metro land. And so that's the broader concern. There's a very, of course, direct concern here regarding a solicitation, which this board has been involved in for more years than I care to contemplate at this point. It has been going on a long time. And the fact that we have previously been out on a joint development process is very material to this. And we have an RFP pending, or some kind of request for proposals pending. But we have done this before, and we had a series of respondents with proposals, some of whom perhaps are reapplying for this very same project. And so as part of that earlier solicitation, which was a joint development solicitation, there was extensive community engagement. So I think it's very important to keep that in mind. However, in this particular case, something happened in the summer whereby this got recategorized so as not to trigger the joint development requirements relating to community participation. And, of course, it so happens that I represent this neighborhood on the council of the District of Columbia. And it was no time at all until I heard from people saying, wow, you're going to go back out on this. You've rejected who had been the winning bidder. What is our involvement now? And so it was a very fair question for people to ask because this is a large and significant parcel of land at Florida and 8th Street Northwest. So anyway, so that's what brings us here. And so at our last meeting, this committee indicated that it wanted to see some form of community consultation occur, even though this was not by definition of staff, this was not by definition of staff, a joint development solicitation per se, that we still were interested in making sure that our neighbors in this area felt some kind of engagement over this process. So anyway, this is what brings us here today. And so, Mr. Sorrells, are you making the presentation?
Yeah, I will make the presentation.
Pardon me?
Nat Bodenheimer will make
it. Mr. Bodenheimer, you're going to make the presentation.
Thank you very much, Mr.
If you can just, I think the committee is interested in, we understand the issues very well, so if you tell us how we're going to address the issue of community engagement, that's where we want to be.
Okay, terrific. I did want to just add parenthetically as a follow-up to Mr. Graham's comments that one of the follow-up items that was requested last month was for us to come back with a more generalized process for approval for how properties are categorized as excess property or joint development property before prior to solicitation. So we will be bringing that back subsequently. We understand that is an ongoing need. With respect to Florida Avenue, the request was for us to identify ways that we could include public input, public engagement in the disposition of this property. On page 10 of 18, we have identified four alternatives. The first alternative was what we brought to you, what we put out in the original solicitation. It's an invitation for bids. It did not involve any public engagement process. The second is the item that we're going to be recommending today, which is that we delay the we have extended the due date of the solicitation to November 19th to allow for today's presentation, but alternative two would have us extend it further allow for us to coordinate with the District of Columbia and the council member and the local community to determine exactly what is the local community we should be consulting with, and for us to engage with the community, get feedback, and then there's a certain open-ended aspect to this. Depending on what we hear, make further modifications to the solicitation for bids, but keep it within the context of an invitation for bids. So the kind of input we might get would might be, for example, we only want to see proposals for residential development, in which case we might amend the solicitation to say only residential developers. We'd try to introduce some kind of language that would limit it. Or we might simply say, this is what we heard as part of the community input. We want all proposers, all bidders, to recognize that this is the strongly expressed sentiment of the community as far as what development outcomes in this area would be. So there's sort of a due diligence. We're letting people know what the development environment in the community is. The third alternative is rather than having Metro go out into the community, we're saying if you want to submit a bid, if you want to make a purchase offer or you want to propose a long-term lease, you need to certify to us that you have met with the community, and we would need to come up with some mechanism that's appropriate for certification, but it would be the developer would certify that they have met with qualified community representatives, have heard feedback, they have independently gotten their understanding of what the development environment is, and then they would be, if they can make that certification, then they're allowed to submit a price proposal or a lease proposal consistent with the IFB. The fourth alternative basically says, let's cancel the invitation for bids. Let's not select a development partner on the basis of price alone and information that's available from the community, you know, some enhanced information from the community, and reissue a request for proposals or potentially go with a joint development approach. So those are the four approaches. We're recommending number two. We think it is administratively simplest. It allows for us to get the level of public feedback. It won't, I think, dampen demand from the development community to submit proposals because it won't be an arduous process for the bidders. All we need to do is consult with the community, modify the documents appropriately, and then wait to see what kind of proposals we get. So that, in summary, is the presentation, and take questions at this point.
Mr. Bodenheimer, I'm wondering, considering the fact that this development has been delayed for what can be accurately described as many years.
I won't dispute that.
Right. And considering the fact that we have already had an extensive community engagement, wouldn't it be possible for us to permit the deadline of November 19th to stand, and thereafter each direct that anyone who had submitted a bid meet with, and we could even go so far as to designate under this special process, to meet with the Advisory Neighborhood Commission and perhaps others that are key elements of the community, and explain what their proposals were, and then get feedback from them, and do that for, a 30-day period, and then come back to Metro?
I think the concern is that, having discussed this issue with council, that that when you open proposals or offers an invitation for a bid, that you cannot seek any further clarification. It must be clear on its face what the proposal is, and if it's inconsistent with the terms of the IFB, it's rejected. So any further attempt to obtain information and to affect the solicitation would not really, I don't think would be possible. I'm going to ask council to. And now, are you proposing that?
Let's get council's reaction.
Excuse me, I'm not.
Mic's not on.
It's on. I'm just. I've got kind of laryngitis. The utilization of an invitation for bids means that you can award a contract on the basis of price alone, and that there are no it's not necessary to have discussions with the proposers. So if the concept is that there needs to be a fuller engagement with the community, then that means that you can't engage, you can't award on the basis of price alone. So it would be better to utilize a different solicitation methodology, such as a request for proposal. If as one of the options was that WMATA would seek community input, and then, if necessary, amend the solicitation, that's possible. I mean, that's certainly legally possible. The challenge is, again, to amend the solicitation in such a way that people can say, we're going to give you exactly what you've asked for, and we can award on that basis rather than, and I'm not saying it's not possible, it's a little bit of a challenge when you go through this type of process. So I think to open the bids and then to go out for community comment, it introduces an element that is not typically present when you utilize an invitation or bid process.
Mr. Graham, were you perhaps suggesting that we keep the deadline, the proposal deadline, at November 19th as it currently is and not open the bids, and allow, so that we would we'd keep the deadline, we'd ask people to submit it, but then say, before we open the bids, we would like you to consult with the community, and after that's completed, then we would open the bids. Is that something
would
like
that? Would that be possible?
The idea occurred to me, so I need to actually ask council sort of in real time.
How would they know what they're bidding?
Well, I'm going to give the bidders a chance to then amend their bids. I mean, again, the only issue with an invitation to bid is that it's got to be based, the award has got to be based on price alone after you have defined all the terms and conditions of your solicitation. And, I mean, I'm not saying we couldn't do it. I'm just saying that in this context, it is a challenge to make sure that the solicitation allows a proposer to say, yes, we're going to give you X, Y, and Z, and this is how much it costs. If you can't use that process, then you typically use a request for proposals, which allows for greater latitude in discussion. And the conversation I have with Mr. Bodenheimer is it's as much a challenge for us as it is for the bidders, because we use a process that really is followed with procurement. And if bidder doesn't give you exactly what you want, then it has to be rejected out of hand. And that kind of very rigid process is difficult when you're going to introduce more factors than just price.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Albert.
Admittedly, I haven't followed this discussion for a while, but I'm trying to understand why we are trying to put in my mind, an artificial deadline on this issue. I mean, it's been out there for a long time. In my mind, adding a couple weeks, months, a month, so that the folks who are going to be responding to this have the benefit of the community's input, I think leads to a much better process. I know for a fact that Howard University is keenly aware of this site again being in play and would like to at least have their views on a joint solicitation or joint development proposal heard. You're a council member that represent the area, and you understand the importance also of having community input. So I would err on the side of extending the deadline for a few weeks or maybe a month so that the community could better inform the product that they're ultimately looking for when responses come in.
Mr. Downey?
And if that were the process followed, then anyone who was bidding would have the same information.
Yes, correct.
That's exactly right.
Inform their bid. And for the question, the community involvement process beyond that would still go forward, right?
That's
local
correct.
Approvals would still be required even after a bid had been opened and awarded.
So whatever the local planning and zoning approval process would certainly be in effect.
But it might be as a matter of right. Mr. Benjamin.
It strikes me that we seem here to be creating a new process under the labels of property disposition that sort of mimics our joint development process. And the things that we're talking about doing are the ones that we used to do in joint development and rejected because they didn't work. And in particular, one of those was meeting with the community before you had a plan. And one of the things that we moved away from, we used to meet with the community early on, and nobody came. And when they did come, they said, well, what is it that's going to happen? And we couldn't say because we didn't know who was going to do the development and what they were going to do in that development. And yeah, and all we had was people who were very frustrated, didn't tell us anything useful. And then when finally the developer came along, they said, well, why didn't you tell us that earlier? You know, were you hiding it? And we're sort of heading into the same thing again. And it isn't clear to me how that all works. And it doesn't seem like we're learning from our prior experience.
My reaction to that is that's an accurate characterization of how we would handle projects where the replacement of transit facilities, transit access facilities was involved, and where what we weren't able to answer was the question of where would private development go, how would that affect transit facilities, and you know, how many pounds of flour can we put into the 5-pound bag of a transit site. This is, as an excess property, it's not complicated by those considerations. So I'm not sure that this is really a very different process that we're talking about. In fact, I think that my perception of what's being requested is that we do some of the due diligence of providing information about what the development environment is surrounding the site so that people can make price competitive bids with equal access to the same information, and that what we're being asked to do is to go into the community to solicit that information, characterize it so that bidders all know, and they can come into it with open eyes. I think it's still an invitation for bids. It's still an excess property disposition. I think what we're being asked to do is put information into the bid documents that's maybe more complete from a community
I understand that, but I guess what I don't understand is I thought the proposal here is that we would go to the community before the IFB was amended, and then we would amend it based on what we heard from the community. Is that right?
And I would say it's the option to amend it depending on what we hear. And we may get direction from the board to say, look, keep it as an IFB, an invitation for bids, but just make sure that you solicit information from the community about what the development outcome is and reflect that in the bid documents. That may be your direction, and then what we would go to the community is to say.
Okay, so what I remember as the problem that we had before is we would go to the community and we would say, we're ready to put this out to bid, or at that point it was for a joint development proposal, and they would say, well, is it going to be commercial? Is it going to be residential? We want to have community meeting space in it. And we couldn't answer any questions, and they all got frustrated and said, you guys are just keeping it secret, and you really know, but you aren't telling us. And we didn't know, and we couldn't tell them.
Right.
And we seem to be in the same situation here. And so if I were a community member, I'd be very frustrated. And if I were a developer and interested in bidding, I would send 10 people to whatever meeting we hold that all say, well, what I want is that guy's proposal without saying it's that guy's proposal. So they would then influence the result. I don't see how we make this work given our past experience.
Well, let me just, before I call on Mr. Solomon, let me say we have a policy in place, and I don't know how this has worked everywhere, but I have been, as you know, very involved in joint development proposals in the District of Columbia. And the policy that we have in place actually has worked well.
But that's
What happened here is that without coming to this committee or to this board, an IFB was put out, an excess property solicitation was put out, with various questions relating to the criteria and standards for doing that. And furthermore, it was put out on the basis of highest price criteria. And that happened, and then we were informed of it, and then this meeting is the consequence of all of that. So, but my interest here is, number one, I don't want to start over.
because we've started, this has been going on too long. And number two, I want to recognize that we've had community engagement. I want some level of community engagement without making this into a joint development process, because we've had it.
I guess the problem I have is that, as you point out, we learned a lot in trying to do joint developments, which really this is what it is, even though it was put out as something else. And we tried to fix all that in our procedures, and now what we're doing is trying to take another process and make it look sort of like that procedure, and I don't know how that works.
Well, that's what we're trying to figure out. But we didn't set this sail on this. Somebody else did. And now I'm just trying to get injected into this process some element of community engagement so we can go forward. Mr. Solomon?
Yeah, for clarification purposes, how does this process with Florida Avenue, I guess the invitation for bids, different from the process the authority is using for New Carrollton?
Oh, well, the world's apart. This one is basically saying we're offering it to, as Mr. Graham says, to the firm or individual who offers us the best value for the property. And we have asked for either lease or purchase proposals because we didn't want to presuppose which direction the board preferred, but it would be a highest value. Our proposal would be to bring to the board the highest value purchase offer and the highest value lease offer, and then have the board choose between them based on the policy considerations related to purchase versus sale. But the key point would be that closing would be, shortly after the board approves the award. And so if somebody says, I want to pay you $20 million for this piece of property, they come to the closing with a check for $20 million, they give it to us, and they get the property. Whereas in the joint development process, we don't actually price the property or close on it until really much further down the line. So I know that one of the questions that came up in the joint development process was whether people sort of jockeyed for position by making artificially high price proposals to us and then getting the award on that basis. I don't think that's going to be a concern in this process, because basically you have to have the money in order to get the property. And then, what you're proposing to us is based on your expectation of what the property is worth. But then once you have it, it's your responsibility to develop it, and that's it. So the process at New Carrollton is much more collaborative. It has a lot to do with trying to figure out how we replace parking, where we replace bus pays, all of those things which are of concern to the community, and determine how much property is available for a private developer and how good the transit access is subsequently.
Could I get a direct answer to my question, which you rephrased, which is that if we take the bids on November the 19th but do not open them, and have at that time each bidder go before relevant organizations and make presentations, and then have a report back on that process and then open the bids, is that permissible or not? And I think this is a question I would put to our council.
If you're introducing another element for award besides price, which is the stated, as I understand, in the solicitation, the stated and only criteria for award is the best value or the highest price to WMATA. If you're going to introduce another element for award or another criteria, then we will have to amend the solicitation so that everybody knows that and they can take that fact into account.
I mean, I guess the question is, if the bids aren't opened and the award is still made on that basis, and we haven't asked for any clarification, the only option that you would be giving to the bidders is the option to withdraw their proposals during that interim. If somebody goes through the process and says, well, after having consulted with the community, I don't want my bid opened. I mean, I think it's tantamount to an extension of the deadline of the proposal, but.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Benjamin.
I guess I don't understand again. So we would keep the bids sealed, people would go out to the public, and then we would open the bids ignoring what happened when they went to the public?
No. No, that was the question that I put to council, and that the answer we've gotten. See, the problem here is that you've put us back in the pickle we were in before by having this decision based entirely on price. I mean, I was on this board when we awarded the prior contract on the basis of this $14 million offer, which, by the way, I said at the time was absurd. And so here we're back in again. Now, the difference is that these folks are going to have to write a check. They're going to have to get the money up front quickly in a settlement. That's the difference, and it's an important difference. But how we fit into – there are many considerations in awarding this three parcel. There are three parcels of land. There are many considerations from the point of view of the neighborhood and the city in terms of who we award to, besides just simply who's got the most money. And that's the pickle that we have been put into by what I'm going to describe as unilateral action on the part of staff, and, you know, which we're going to figure out now for subsequent policies. But that's what happened to us, which is upsetting. And so now we're being told because we went out with a price-only consideration, we can't have any community engagement over it, you know?
Mr. Chairman, that isn't actually what I'm hearing. What I'm hearing is if we awarded exactly on the basis of bids that had been submitted, community engagement would have to be meaningless because price is everything.
That's what I said. Yes.
If there's some other place to gain community engagement first and then require the bids to be restructured, we could do it. But otherwise, I think the proposal you make would be very frustrating. People would put a sealed number in the envelope, we'd have this whole process, and the only thing we could do at the end of that is open the envelope and probably be obliged to award to the highest bidder.
How long would it take to amend the IRB, the IFB, and then thereafter do, I guess you'd have to permit a new solicitation, and then as part of that process have a community engagement? How much time are we talking about? That's your alternative two.
Alternative two, I would estimate about 2 months. I'd say sometime in mid-January, and we would, you know, we would immediately after getting direction from you, we'd obviously work with you in the district to craft what the engagement process was, and then.
Except, Mr. Chair, that does in fact run into the problem that we run into before and that we discovered didn't work. Is that if we don't actually end up with any proposals before the public, and so we don't have anything meaningful that we can discuss with them. And if I were a bidder, I would try to bias the process. And we don't know to what degree that's happening because we don't have any definition of who the public is.
Well, I can only say, Mr. Benjamin, that's not the way it happened in my experience. I mean, we had specific proposals discussed with the public, and the public did give
Because we had specific proposals.
Right. But
this isn't doing that.
Yes, it would. Yes, it would.
Are you would Metro staff come with specific proposals?
No, not Metro staff. The developers would come with specific proposals.
Oh, you're right. You want to change this from recommendation two to one in which the developers do the proposals.
No, recommendation two involves the developers going to the neighborhood.
No, it did not.
Oh.
The recommendation two involves us consulting with the neighborhood and getting feedback back.
Oh,
it was alternative. It's alternative. It's alternative. Alternative three says, in order to submit a price proposal under the terms of the IFB, you have to, as a proposer, demonstrate that you have met with the community. Somebody can check the box and say they met with us for an hour on, you know, the evening of November 19th. We discussed, our community's interest with them, and they heard it, and now they can submit a proposal to us, fully knowing what.
I'm sorry.
But not necessarily following.
No, there would not be anything binding if, you know, if
I don't think Mr. Graham was asking for a meeting. He was asking for a meeting that had an outcome.
I thought that under alternative two, we would amend the IFB so as to permit a decision on a basis other than strictly price.
Well, I apologize if I was unclear. It was to. I would want my posture in going out to the community to be as open as possible, and say, depending on what I hear from you, we would be open to amending the process. And the question to you all would be, do you want to keep it closed and an invitation for bids, where I'm, in which case I would go to the community and I would say, you know, tell me what you want, and I'll reflect it in our bid documents, and then all proposers will know what the environment is, but they won't be bound to it. And the alternative, but a more open posture with the community would be, we're proposing to make this available for private development. Right now it's price only, but there are other development approaches available. We're open to modifying the bid documents depending on what you tell us.
Well, that seems to me to extend the process even more.
That would extend the process.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Correct.
So why couldn't we have this be what I suggested, which I thought alternative two was, that we amend the IFB and we allow for a decision based on something other than strictly the price, that we then we extend the deadline to permit proposers to go to the neighborhood and present their proposals, have input, and then make a decision on the basis of multiple factors. Why couldn't we do that?
We would need to amend it now.
I mean, isn't that what number four actually
is? That's what alternative four is.
Number four takes us to a formal joint development process. It starts all over.
It would be good, but at least this one looks a little bit different. It's an RFP because you're taking in something other than price. And we would also have to have a mechanism that allows us to evaluate, given what the community has said, what do we want to actually ask for?
Mr. Graham?
Yes.
Utilizing an RFP doesn't mean that we would automatically go to the joint development process. It simply means that it gives us greater flexibility in considering something other than price and perhaps having some limited discussions with the proposers. Of course, it would extend somewhat because we have to amend the solicitation to incorporate those principles, but it doesn't mean that we would flip automatically to the joint development criteria, which are somewhat much more extensive.
So we would be able to do this by just amending the solicitation and not have to go back out and giving the developers or whomever the proposers an opportunity to resubmit?
I think that if, okay.
Would, of course, once you amend the solicitation, the proposers have to have right to re-propose. That's the whole purpose of amendment.
I think that if you were to direct us to pursue alternative four, we would need some time to recast this as to, you know, we might say it's going to be 60% based on price and 40% based on quality of proposal or something, you know, some other set of evaluation factors. But I would want to get board approval of what that amended approach was, because that's you know, that would be tantamount to a new solicitation. I would want to come back and bring that to you.
I mean, Mr. Chairman. I mean, in all fairness, I think we have to, you know, I mean, I hate to keep talking back, but when we were doing joint development at the federal level, and we had some solicitations and discussions with developers in the overall community, one of the frustrations they had with the agencies was not knowing what it is they were required to do at the onset. And, you know, that was the thing that they found the most frustrating, is that this kind of continuing moving target in which they expend time and energy continually have to respond. And at some point they said, why is it, it's not worth it. We're spending a tremendous amount of time and money, and you guys can't make up your mind what it is you want. If you let us know up front and give us a chance of at least laying out what your expectations are, then we have something that we can respond to. So I'm not speaking against what you're seeking to do, Mr. Graham, but I'm just thinking that if you're going to establish a process like that, it should give those who are going to propose a level playing field, some acknowledge of what the expectations are, so that they can respond accordingly.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Brown.
And in that situation, even though you can never guarantee that there will never be any protests,
this kind of opens the door to massive protests because everyone's going to claim that there was an unfair advantage whoever wins.
Yep.
So I was just thinking. Ms. Hutchins.
Well, I just wanted to add to Mr. Linton's point. I think the foundation of that is we would have set the expectations by first going to the committee. And I think that part's been missing here. If that's what, because
we did it once.
Well, if we've done it once, it's, to me, we didn't do it to move the ball. We did it because of an optimum. Now, maybe the process is a little bit different where we've done so in that each time we wanted to continue to change the process, change the expectations. But it seems like the foundation has to be, what do we want to do with this property? When we say utilize resources wisely, it isn't only the cost, as you said. It's what do we want these parcels best for revenue and economic development and quality of life for the community. That should have been the first aspect of what was defined. And now, whoever wants to bid and how we evaluate that bid, it isn't just price we're checking off. We're checking off the what you want there. But I don't know why we need to go back if we thought it was, we responded to it before.
Except it isn't part of the IFP.
Well,
that's the problem.
Well,
we didn't say what we wanted.
We did say what we wanted.
We just wanted to get rid of what we had.
The staff said what they wanted.
Well,
this is really,
that's what we're, that's the pickle.
I don't think we're out. I don't think what we have out will do what it is that many board members now seem to be asking for.
Right. I'm just trying to figure out, is there a way we can do this in an abbreviated version that touches all bases?
Yeah, I think that's number four, but that's abbreviated, but it's abbreviated relative to joint development, but it's not abbreviated relative to where we are right now. It's going to take several months at minimum.
And, Mr. Chair, the reality of it all is the only way you can really do it is to cancel the RFP and start all over.
Yes.
That's your desire to have community input.
And it does sound like what we're really talking about is a joint development project, and the question is, why don't we just follow our joint development procedures once again, starting over again? Though I do believe the last time we still had this tabled, and although the developer has disappeared, the board would have to take it off the table and act on something.
We had no.
I think when
no, we had a selection decision that was tabled, which in order to review,
but that means there's still a joint development project out there.
No, in order to review that specific selection decision, it would have to be taken off. But there is no money needed to do that.
I guess the question is, did we ever close the old RFP?
We
the
closed
old joint development process.
Yeah, so that joint development project was closed when we passed the approved deadline for renegotiating the terms, having failed to get to that resolution, having a tabled item. We returned security and formally terminated the relationship. So there is nothing pending there.
When was the original deadline on this IFP?
The original deadline was this past Friday, October 22nd.
October 22nd, so it's been extended to November 19th.
Correct.
Have we received any proposals?
We've received three.
Or this many?
We sent them all back.
We received three prior to this Friday.
Well, what we were unable to, I mean, we noticed that it had been there'd been a delay on our website, but we didn't put a new advertisement out in the media and say we had no idea who had an intent to propose, so we didn't know who to communicate to. The only tool we have in that event is just to return a proposal and say it's been delayed until November 19th. People can say self-evidently that it hasn't been opened, so they know that.
When can you have, if we were to choose alternative four, when could you have before us for our review the RFP?
I'd probably say December.
December? Not November. Do we meet in November? We could meet in November.
We meet in about 2 weeks.
But how? What would be involved? Couldn't you prepare an RFP for November?
I just, I feel uncomfortable doing it.
It's only 2 weeks.
Pardon me?
It's only 2 weeks between this meeting and the next one.
Of this committee.
Mr. Chairman, if we went that route, I'm not sure also it achieves what you want. Shouldn't we have community involvement before the RFP is developed?
That is not the policy.
In order to get a reasonable basis for people to do other than just price.
Mr. Downey, if I may just add some color to that. So there is a small area plan for that area, which was developed based on lots of community dialogue and input.
The response to that plan would be one of the criteria.
Right. So incorporating elements of that plan into the RFP should be helpful to that community involvement piece.
That's a good point.
So the RFP might say how much you're willing to pay, but how closely can you
align
to what the community had agreed to in a small area plan.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't actually do the community involvement then because it's already been done.
So adopt that as the community involvement.
That's cool.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So could you restate your suggestion, Mr. Albers?
Thank you.
Well, so what I'm suggesting is that we put criteria within the RFP that points to development as outlined in the small area plan that's been developed. I don't know, I can't remember the timing for the development of that small area plan. It's probably a year or two old. But there's a lot of community input in developing that plan, and that should be a good substitute for a good proxy for community input that we've been talking about.
So, did you understand that?
I wanted to see if I could repeat it back. It would be to incorporate explicitly, not by reference, but directly into the bid documents, the small area plan.
Yeah, the relevant elements of the small area plan. Yes,
we could do that and keep the November 19th due date. I don't see any problem with that at all.
All right. Is everybody understand the motion?
No. Are we now on number four?
No,
change it to an RFP.
We're now on number. We're back to.
It's number one with a clarification to the bid documents. That of what the requirements of the small area plan are and what the community's expressed desires for the outcomes in the area are, but maintaining it as an invitation for bids and a price based.
That doesn't read like number one to me.
Well, is it not?
I thought the comment was what we were going to do was go back out and say your proposal must be consistent with, or we will evaluate your proposal based upon level of consistency with the small area plan.
Here's my anxiety about that. If I am saying it must be consistent with the small area plan, then I will be forming a judgment that I would expect that the director of the DC Office of Planning would be the expert on. I'm not sure. I mean, I'm not a planning and zone. I mean, I could ask for the opinion of the DC Office of Planning of whether a proposed plan was consistent with the small area plan and make that an amended an amendment to the invitation for bids. I mean, basically what it says is if you tell me what your price proposal is, you tell me what your development concept is, and I will get the DC Office of Planning to certify this is or is not consistent with the small area plan, I will select from among the proposals that are consistent with the small area plan the highest value that's consistent with the small area plan. I'm trying to walk through what
your selection process.
I don't think that's what we're saying at all. So
okay,
this small area plan has been developed by the DC Office of Planning. So and I think approved by the City Council of the District of Columbia. So all of the confirmations and approvals that you talked about with regards to the planning office are there already.
I would think. I mean, what I thought I had heard from your proposal was that we're on alternative one. We're providing information in the bid documents to proposers, but we're going to select on the basis of price. But I heard from other members of the board that maybe there was something different, and so I was complicating it too in order to try and capture what I thought others were maybe asking for.
Well, let's not complicate it. Let's simplify it.
But your point of finding out what people are asking is right on, because I'm not sure there's agreement on that.
And as I hear it, what we're saying is make consistency with the plan a threshold requirement. We won't accept a show.
That does not align to critical elements of the small area plan.
I just want to make sure, what is the authoritative, who forms the authoritative judgment of whether a proposal is consistent or not consistent with a small area plan? And
well, ultimately, it will be this board which awards
That's correct, but it would be helpful when you make that decision that, to have some kind of opinion,
well,
I would assume.
Let us get to that.
Okay.
You don't have to make the decision. You know, we have to make the decision on the award.
But he has to guide us.
I'd like to.
But he's
the that comes in.
Well, it would be useful to have somebody who would, in fact, opine at that point for us. But what we're talking about procedurally is continue the current IFB. It's none of the options that's up here. Continue the current IFB approach, but amend it in order to say that each one will be evaluated for consistency with the small area plan.
Evaluated by us. Metro.
I don't know. We have to tell them who's going to evaluate. We got to tell them it's got to be evaluated.
So what is council?
I think it might be useful to have DC planning tell us.
Well, we don't need to resolve that, right?
Right, but what we're doing is we're amending to say it is part that is one of the criteria, and you can put your percentages on it.
If I can jump in a little bit, what I think I hear you saying, you have a pass-fail criteria. Either you meet the plan or you don't. So. Well, okay. Look for council advice. It'll be pass-fail. We will have to set in the, whatever it is, the IFB or whatever, specific criteria as to what you have to pass and what, you know, we ignore from the plan. In other words, you said critical elements. We're going to have to set those. So I think we're going to have to, if we're going to do this, we're going to have to write this down, see if it's truly clear to us, and then be able to proceed.
I actually think we're making this more complicated than it needs to be. You know, I've done tons of RFPs that include elements of small area plans. Without getting as descriptive as you're suggesting, Mr. General Manager, there are key elements in any small area plan. In this plan, I think it's called the Duke Plan. It speaks to elements of affordable housing, of retail, of density. I mean, very broad elements that I think could be easily incorporated or referenced in the RFP. I don't know that we need to get to specific level of details as to, you know, the levels of affordability, the amount to retail, but it's a guideline when you get to the scoring part of it.
That's what I'm hearing is two different things. One is IFP and one is RFP. I agree with you 100% on the RFP. You have a lot more flexibility. But if we're talking about an IFP, then you have to be much more strict.
Although we have, that's not a defined term. That is not a defined term. That's what we're going to do at a future meeting, to figure out just exactly what these various.
I would suggest that we have to understand whether we have an IFP, IFB we're going forward with, or an RFP. If we're doing an IFB, you're basically awarding on price after you've determined whether on a pass-fail criteria they met the basic requirements.
I think we're all saying the same thing at this point. What? Using somewhat different.
To that, parliamentary inquiry, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, no.
Question.
Not parliamentary inquiry at this point. We're almost finished.
Well, actually, that's what I wanted to find out. Is there, in fact, a motion?
Well, yeah, Mr. Albert has made a motion. Can you repeat your motion?
I don't think you've made a motion.
Well, would you make a motion, Mr. Albert?
Well, I think we got to clarify the issue that the general manager raised about IFB versus RFP. And I think I agree with the general manager. I always agree with you, general manager, that in my mind, an IFB comes down to sort of price being the primary consideration. And what we're suggesting here, based on the conversations, is that price is not the only consideration. I think that we need to make a decision, IFB versus RFP first, and I would actually recommend RFP.
But then we have to start over. If we do the IFB with a threshold relating to the small area plan, then we can stay with the current process.
But I don't know. I'm hearing that legally that's not possible.
I just to figure out what we're
as Mr. Sarles said.
We were so close.
Very, very close. But then we had the parliamentary inquiry.
It is possible. It is possible. You can have best price technically acceptable, and then you simply define the elements of technically acceptable pursuant to the small area plan. So it does take on a pass-fail element. You have to meet that technical.
It's a matter of responsiveness.
Yeah. You have to meet those criteria in order to be considered, and then you have to have the best price.
That sounds good to me.
But we would still have to amend and give everybody a reasonable time
to redo
their bids. They may have to change their proposal.
I have to think about this, but I think there's a possibility that if what we're going to introduce to the bid is not just a price proposal, but also a concept proposal that we will then have to evaluate, then I think the bidders will need to have a little extra time to come up with I would maybe two weeks, two additional weeks to allow proposers to come up with a 2 weeks.
All right. Does everybody understand the motion?
No. In the absence of a motion, Mr. Chairman, I would suggest we adjourn.
Someone
is not willing to put forward a proposal.
Well, I will move. I will move. I don't like to move as chair, but I'm going to move in this case that we amend the IRB to establish the IFB to establish a threshold that any proposal must include a consideration. Must demonstrate consistency with the small area plan.
Right.
And that the deadline be extended in order to accommodate that requirement. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in, is there discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed, no. The ayes have it. Motion is carried. There being no further business before this committee, the committee is adjourned.